and welcome to NextPod, VP NextGen's podcast made for veterinary students and young professionals who want to know what's next. I'm your host, Sarah Sed, and this is a bonus episode all about giving back within the veterinary industry. To speak on the subject, we have Banfield Foundation's very own Kim Van Syk. Welcome, Kim.
Oh, thank you, Sarah, for having me. I'm so excited to be here today.
No, I'm excited to talk to you. So I just want to start out by, you know, asking if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and how you kind of came to your position today.
Absolutely. So I've been part of the Banfield family of businesses for 11 years. I helped create the Banfield Foundation. This September will be 5 years, actually. And I have the honor of serving as the executive director of the Banfield Foundation. And really, my career has been a little bit of a zigzag. My traditional background really is in public relations, crisis and issues management. Obviously, I still love that part of my background, but I, about 7 years ago, really started to take a real interest in the corporate social responsibility aspect of the work that Banfield does. And I really spent quite a bit of time helping to put form and function into all the ways that Banfield gives back and corporate philanthropy and volunteer programs for associates and certainly charitable giving. And as that part of my career progressed, so did my long-term aspirations of where I wanted to give back. And about 2 years ago, I committed to just doing the charitable side of the work, and I left the corporate communications part behind. And so I'm really, you know, been on an evolution of sort of starting with tiptoeing into it, and now I'm just like knee deep, and I love it. So that's a little bit about me and my background.
That's so cool. And you mentioned that you kind of helped start the Banfield Foundation.
I did.
About like, what was the start like?
Yeah, I mean, so when we as a company, so as Banfield, really, we've always been very charitable, and our associates are so caring and passionate. I mean, so is the entire veterinary profession, of course, right? So we knew a lot of our associates were already doing good work in their local communities, but we didn't really have a great way to measure it or manage it or really talk about it in order to inspire our associates, retain our associates, and, you know, of course, attract new ones. And so we did this massive audit and listed all the ways in which our associates were giving back and all the ways in which Banfield as a corporation was helping to promote and sponsor those. And what we found is that there was just this real deep connection and need for a truly altruistic sort of side of giving, which would be through, you know, a charitable arm. And so in partnership with our leadership team, we put a framework together, decided, you know, the focus areas. It's very similar to Banfield's corporate social responsibility pillars of wellness of pets and communities and our people in the profession. And the foundation was really one of those levers in how we give back. Certainly we're nearly exclusively focused on pets, which makes sense. So, you know, we have been, like I said, September will be 5 years. And in that 5 years, we have granted nearly $10 million and helped more than 4 million pets. I think we've granted, like literally given 1,400 individual grants to shelters, veterinary schools, and other nonprofit organizations across the country. So what started as sort of a lever and a proof point for how we give back has become really its own full-fledged initiative and program.
That's awesome. And I mean, like now with everything happening in the world, like giving back is really important. And this generation, for good reason, is increasingly focused on social responsibility and solidarity and support. And so can you share with us like what you think is most important for people to know when it comes to giving back within vet med?
I mean, absolutely. First of all, there's never a bad time to give back. And I think that, you know, you said it perfectly, which is this, you know, new generation of veterinary students and the future of the veterinary profession, they're so already committed to charitable causes and making a difference in the world and using their voice for good. And I think it is just a natural, really wonderful extension for them to continue to look to make a difference, both when they're in school and then certainly when they transition into their long-term career. And giving back, again, it can show up in so many different ways. There's not really a universal definition, but what, you know, the simplest way to think of it is giving back is using something you have, whether it's time, whether it's a skill or your talent, or whether it's financial support to help someone who needs something, right? I mean, it's pretty simple, but it's important to remember that giving back doesn't just show up in one way. You know, certainly skilled volunteerism is so important and so valued, especially in the veterinary profession. And I think that is something that people often forget, because we joke, we're like, technically I'm considered like a lay person because I'm not skilled labor. Like, I'm not a technician and I'm not a veterinarian, right? But when we think about the ways that this profession needs volunteers, it's often like in shelters, and it's delivering direct care, and it's doing wellness checks, and it's, you know, caring for pets. So that is just so valuable. When you think about giving back, of course, financial support is always needed. That's how nonprofits run. And so that's really critically important. And then certainly time, right? So even if you're not skilled labor, as the technical term is called, your time to help around a kennel or walk dogs or bottle feed kittens during kitten season, like all of that is so, so really important. And just this profession is so well positioned to make a huge, meaningful difference now, certainly in this world of COVID, but, you know, in the future as well, because animals, they're never going to be less important to this, you know, profession or to people.
No, definitely. And of course, like, veterinarians are so passionate about what they do that, you know, it allows for more, like, opportunity. Like, when you're passionate about something and you come together with other people, you can use that to make an even bigger difference. Right. So I think,
yeah. And we know that, especially when people are thinking about where do I want to work and, you know, what company do I want to be part of, you know, years, like probably 5 years ago, we did a pretty in-depth study of veterinary students across all different years and said, like, when you're thinking about a place to work, what is most important to you? And it was, you know, 25 different attributes, and certainly working for a place that gives back, makes a difference in their community came up as one of the top three reasons that they would consider somewhere to work. And I think that, you know, I feel the same way about that, right? I'm not a veterinary student, but I think, you know, being aligned with a purpose-driven company, a company that naturally wants to solve issues and leverage their size and scale for good, is really important. And I think that's not just important to talk about, but obviously to live up to, because you don't want someone to think like, oh, they talked about all these great things I could do, and then I came to work for them and I never got to do those things. And so I think something that's a really great example of, you know, how deep and caring veterinary professionals are. Like, the days are not short when you work in a veterinary hospital. They're not always glamorous, obviously very important, right? Because you're helping sick pets or keeping healthy pets healthy. But we hear from so many of our associates, and Banfield has about 19,000 associates across the country, that even though they work full time, they love giving back on the weekends, right? Or in their free time. And we help make that possible through a paid volunteer program. We have plenty of opportunities for them to give back and literally deliver direct care to pets in the community whose owners couldn't afford it. So, I mean, there is never a shortage of ways to give back and help, whether it's, you know, during your regular hours or, you know, on the weekends.
Yeah. And so how can people also do all of those things, in your opinion, but still adhere to, like, the social distance?
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh, that is the question of the year. So I think it's number one to accept that 2020 is a bit of a weird one. I think we've all accepted this, and manage expectations accordingly. So a really good example is, so one of the programs I love most about Banfield and the Banfield Foundation working together is that typically in a given year, we host 50 preventive care clinics. So this looks like going into inner cities or, you know, areas that have high populations of vulnerable pets and pet owners who couldn't afford care, veterinary deserts. And we partner usually with another third party, like a social service provider. So they help veterans or homeless or whatever it might be. And Banfield associates, so techs and doctors, will volunteer usually up to an 8-hour day. And the foundation, we donate all the medical supplies, and usually somewhere between 75 and about 150 pets on a single day get complete preventive care. So vaccinations and heartworm testing and deworming and sometimes microchips, flea tick, and of course the really important time of face-to-face conversation with the veterinarian. And those clinics are definitely the highlight when you talk to associates about what excites them about giving back. And we just had to let our community champions know about a week ago that those clinics are on hold for the rest of the year because, of course, social distancing, you don't want crowds of people coming together. But we've tried to reinforce, and we're constantly doing this in partnership with Banfield's CSR team, that there's still plenty of ways to give back and make sure that preventive care is still, you know, getting delivered. And some of that might be that instead of us doing the work ourselves, we're having to give supplies and financial support to shelters and other community organizations that do this naturally as part of their operating. And a lot of it is looking at what does virtual volunteering look like right now. And so obviously it's very different depending on the part of the country that you live in and the unique situation in your community. But here's, I think, some really important things that we've tried to stress. So of course, if you have a relationship or a preferred shelter that you maybe adopted your own pet from, or you want to give back to call them and explain that either you have a skill. So again, technicians and veterinarians or students in training also are considered skilled labor. And see if there's some kind of volunteering you could do that still adheres to social distance guidelines. And there's a lot of them. So again, a lot of shifts instead of maybe some of the trauma hospitals at the shelters used to be open like 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. They're now open 24 hours because they're putting folks into different shifts and to different operating rooms. There's still pets in kennels that need to be walked and have enrichment and played with. And like right now it's kitten season. And when I say like bottle feed kittens, that's like a thing, right? Like there are several shelters who are desperately looking for volunteers to come in and work in those 24-hour nurseries and care for those kittens. Again, a lot of that, those shelters have done a really good job of setting up social distance space. They need fosters. That's a great way to volunteer in a way that is really truly beneficial back to both the pet and the person. So fostering is another great opportunity. And then something people don't realize is a lot of shelters in particular have Amazon wish lists. So if you're ever wondering, like, I don't really want to give, you know, $50 because I don't know where it goes, but I want to support this organization, you can go to Amazon, and typically most shelters will have a wish list and you can direct purchase from there and send those directly to the shelters as well. So those are examples of, you know, giving your time, making financial donation, but in some cases, again, call your shelter or your favorite nonprofit and ask what else you can do virtually, because now is a really important time for them to keep up donor relationships. And sometimes that's just a lot of calling people, right? Phone calls, sending notes, sending emails, doing checkups and saying, you know, calling those donors and just like, hey, how's your pet? You know, how are you doing with, you know, the stay home, or how are you doing during COVID, and thanking them for their support. So there's so many ways that people can give back right now. Without having to worry about being, you know, 6 feet from another person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Virtual volunteering. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so kind of like off of that, is there a way that maybe veterinary professionals, young professionals can use social media to make a change and give back as well?
Yeah. It's such a great question. I think sometimes people, maybe not the younger ones, because they're very typically well-versed in social, but when we've asked shelters, like, what are other things that even we as a foundation, what can we do besides giving you a grant and potentially finding ways for people to come in and volunteer in person? And social media is obviously so important for businesses, right? It gives them validation. It helps show their donors and their supporters how dollars are being used, the pets that they're helping. And what is often undervalued, I think, by people, not by the organization, is liking, commenting, sharing, engaging, inviting your friends and family to do the same, tagging people. I think folks don't realize just how instrumental and helpful that kind of social engagement is in an organization feeling validated or appreciated. Especially because we know that it's almost like we know consumers sort of vote with their dollars, right? Like you decide what businesses you support by where you spend your money. And I don't think that the social currency is that different when you think about where you give your likes and your shares and your comments. It also is a way of you unofficially voting and endorsing that organization. And so a lot of our nonprofit partners have shared that just engaging organically with them on social media is tremendously helpful and encouraging to their teams.
Yeah, for sure. And like, it's so easy to do, right? It's like, if you don't have money or anything, like to you don't want to donate necessarily, you're not in that position,
Right.
like giving a little comment of encouragement is really like influential. Like, people don't understand the power they have
I
sometimes.
know it's a little thing, but like a great example is are you familiar with, you know how there's like so many like good news papers right now or Instagram, you know, like all the things that people are sharing all this good news. And so there's this one called Good, 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 and they do, well, really good work and sharing positive stories. And I was flipping through my social like a week ago, and I saw this story about this dog. Her name's Hattie. And she was just hired by the City of Chicago District Attorney's Office to be a therapy dog, I guess, for children who need to testify, who've been abused. And I saw it and I thought, oh my God, that looks so familiar. And then it dawned on me that we actually gave a grant to provide the medical care for Hattie for the duration of her career. But this was back in November. And so they had just kind of picked this story up. And I literally just responded and said something like, I love this story. I'm really proud the foundation has provided, you know, veterinary care for the duration of her career. She's doing such important work. And you sometimes leave comments and you don't really think about them again. And I had a conversation with the CEO of that company like 3 days ago for something else. And he was like, hey, you know, are you KVS for Pets on Instagram? And I said, yes. And he goes, oh my gosh, that comment you left like changed the algorithm for us and became like our most popular comment and like boosted it again. And there's like, I don't know, 30 some odd likes on it, and it put it to the top of the pile. So thank you for that. And again, I didn't even think about it, but then it just reminds you of like those little things can make a really big difference in spreading news.
Yeah, no, and we're seeing that a lot now, just like in general, with the way the world is, like everybody sharing information and helping each other out online like that is like really like making a positive impact for
Yeah.
sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so, I mean, kind of back to, you know, other ways to give back without spending money, like, because money can sometimes be a challenge for young vets or young students. Is there any ways that you can kind of suggest?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question because, and again, I go back to every organization has different needs. We at Banfield have a volunteer program. And I mentioned earlier, right, preventive care clinics are one of the ways that Banfield gives back. But during October tends to be our concentrated sort of volunteer month. But we also know it's when you work in a veterinary hospital, it's not like the hospital closes down necessarily, right? So it's hard to take all the bodies out of a hospital and not be available to treat pets when they need you. And so there is a subset of our associates who either don't have time or aren't able to volunteer out in the community in those longer days. So we put together a lot of volunteer opportunities that enable them to give straight time, right? Not necessarily financial. So it might be a lot of shelters, especially now when in larger communities, shelter pets, the population is significantly reduced from normal because of the huge fostering movement, right? So they have a little bit more space right now in the shelters. And so a lot of them are getting up to speed on like delayed maintenance or other improvements so that when pets do start filling the shelter up again, they're not as behind. And so there's a lot of things, everything from painting to kennel cleaning to organizing. Again, that's time. And again, shelters have gotten very savvy at figuring out how to maintain their volunteers without compromising the social distance, you know, guidelines. And so I think that's a really important way for folks to give back. And even though it may not be directly like direct animal care, it's so important for them to understand how shelters, I'm using that as the main example here, how they operate, how they work, just the huge, robust volunteer systems that it requires to care for that many pets when they're in an organization like that. And so I think that that is really valuable. Or there's a lot of dog park cleanups. So again, added bonus, you're outside, which tends to make things safer. Dog walking, all of those things are really important. And we also do something called MVP. So our volunteer month is called Mars Volunteer Program. MVP in a box. And so there's a lot of, if you have fleece and any skill set with scissors and you've been on Pinterest, there are a lot of cat and dog toys that are safe. And a lot of shelters would love to have additional enrichment items. And so there's been some years where the, you know, Banfield team has literally put together like fleece and instructions and shipped these large boxes out to hospitals, and they'll sit in the back of the hospital rooms and they will have, you know, all their scissors, all their supplies. They're pretty easy to follow. And when people are on break or shift change, or they have just a few minutes between seeing patients and they just want to sit down and do something different with their brain for a few minutes, they can do these volunteer projects. And so I think people have to remember, like, there's lots of things you can do even from the comfort of your home that will benefit pets long-term. It's just a lot about asking, and then I get a good Google search on, you know, toys, pet toys I can make, and those that are safe really goes a long ways.
Yeah, that's so fun. I didn't even think about that. Like, just creating toys makes like a big difference for people, or for maybe organizations who necessarily can't maybe even afford to have.
Yes. I mean, I think people don't realize the value of enrichment for shelter pets. I was talking with the shelter director down in Tucson a few weeks ago, and I'd asked, like, hey, do you guys need, you know, more dog toys, cat toys? Are there certain ones that you really prefer? And interestingly, they had said that shelter anyways, they had invested in every pet, every dog in particular that comes in, I think for the past couple years, gets a type of enrichment toy. So whether it's, you know, the kind that, you know, that people make, or like a Kong. And I say Kong because if they have an ability, apparently they've done research in their shelter that says when pets or dogs get Kongs, the bites, not like mean bites or aggressive bites, but, you know, you're being handled by a lot of strangers, but they go down by 30% because there's additional enrichment for those animals. And so they've realized, like, you know, I think her example was, you wouldn't bring home, you know, a child to your home for the first time and not have any toys to go with them, right? So you need to do the same for animals. And so that's been a really important part of their process, both for having pets in their shelter, but also when they place pets in foster homes.
That's awesome. And so, like, people who are maybe more intimidated to get involved in these kinds of things and get in organizations and reach out, you know, because I feel like a lot of times, even personally, like, I get super excited and I want to help out, but then I'm like, yeah, oh no, I don't want to say anything, or I don't want to call.
It's like cold calling. It gives everybody, makes everybody nervous. Yeah.
Tips for, like, people who maybe feel a bit like that but they do want to give back. So
yeah, I think, here, my advice would be look. So again, it's social media, obviously, or your computer is low barrier, right? For, I would say, you know, feeling nervous or reaching out. So if someone's not comfortable, maybe calling and having that conversation because it's a new organization or it's that's a stranger to them. Certainly looking on organizations' websites, a lot of them have donate items they need or volunteer opportunities. So I think that's a great, like, first point of entry. Same with social media. So follow some organizations that you're really into. I think direct message is always, again, somehow it feels like a safer way to engage with people because it's such a common, you know, common thing now. So again, reaching out and just saying, hey, I have this passion or I have this interest. Would it align? Is there information, you know, a place I could find information? I think the other thing that is important is organizations like Points of Light. For those that aren't familiar, it's pointsoflight.org. They have a virtual volunteer database, I'll call it. And there's a couple different ones that people can find, but you can go in, put in your zip code, you can use keywords or sort of filter like you would anything else, and they'll pop up volunteer opportunities, not just in a local community, but that are able to be done virtually in particular, right? So I think that's another really easy way for people to dip their toes in before they jump all the way in.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess giving back, like you said before, it can look like different things. Like, it could be, you know, making a toy or helping with cleanup or, you know, all of those things. But I'm just wondering, when it comes to like a bigger scale in terms of like organizations and kind of volunteering maybe on a team or like getting involved in, I want to say, the politics side of things, or, mm-hmm, you know what I mean? Like the more, just like actually getting into like an organization in some way, maybe even like, for example, Banfield Foundation, mm-hmm, for young professionals, like, and students who want to do that and really be like connected to with like a group of people or some kind of team? Like, is there a way to do that? Like, is there Banfields have anything like that for young people?
Yeah, we don't necessarily have, okay, well, let me take this back. We, Banfield has a SJP program. It's called Student Job Program. Mm-hmm. And I want to say maybe 2 or 3 years ago, when I think when some of our clinics became a lot bigger and we expanded them every year, SJPs now are integrated into our volunteer process, which I think has been really beneficial for them. And so when veterinary students, again, are in the, that externship or in that volunteer, that student jobs program, they get an opportunity to volunteer along with regular associates and see what that experience is like. And I think that is really eye-opening for a lot of them. It's interesting because we've also done some projects in the past with like SAVMA, right? So the student AVMA chapter, we've done some things at like the annual SAVMA conference several years ago, where I believe on one of the days, typically, they, again, this is all pre-COVID, of course, would get an elective or like an option day to do like a field trip or something else. And we would set up an opportunity to do one of those free preventive care clinics where students would come in and work alongside doctors and essentially be part of like the client intake and understand when you do this sort of shelter or community medicine for people who can't afford it, it really changes your perspective and the things that you focus on, because it's less maybe about, did I ask them all the right questions? And did I think about all the things that might be right wrong with their pet? And a little bit more about just understanding that the one-on-one time with a veterinarian for somebody who otherwise doesn't get that ever is just so valuable. And you just see how you can meet needs of pet owners and pets very differently. And then what's really cool is for students that are with Texas A&M. So Texas A&M implemented a new program, a new class, I should say, called Veterinarians in the Community, I think like a year ago. One of the guys on my team, Steve Kenton, went down there late last year and did a day long sort of lecture, if you will, with the class around how to create programs that give back in the community. Like, how does a program, like a give back program, start? How do you like keep it going? How do you finish it? And what's really cool, at least through Texas A&M, and you might have some students listening that are like, I'm in that class, and that's actually not how it works. So hopefully I'm representing it correctly. But there was a project, I want to say a year ago, where all the students come up with these community projects and then they do like a Shark Tank style pitch to a group of people. And then what's great is like the foundation will actually fund some of these programs for students that come up with these ideas. And so last year, students came up with a program to help provide veterinary care to pets of domestic violence survivors who get out and bring their pets with them. And so they partnered with the local nonprofit, and the Texas A&M veterinary hospital helps provide some of that boarding and that care and that community. And we had, the foundation had launched a program last March to address this very thing. And so when we heard that that was one of the class projects that won, it was a no-brainer for us to support it. So I think that there's probably a lot of things already happening on campuses or in student groups, but I do think that if there isn't, those are some really great places to go and ask, like, what can be done? What could we start together? And it doesn't have to be as big as like delivering direct vet care. It could be at the holidays, everyone does a pet food drive, right? Like, that's really important. Shelters always need food. It could be every time you make your order or you go into a pet food store and you pick up treats, you just grab an extra bag and then you stash them away. And at the holidays, you take them to your shelter and you ask all your friends and your, you know, student classmates to do the same thing. So I think that sadly, there's will always be a need, but on a positive note, there'll always be people who are willing to meet that need as well.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's so cool how like students can kind of come together and come up with an idea that ultimately, like, you know, a Banfield Foundation or any other maybe organization yes. support like that and really bring on a little bit of a different level. And it's as easy as coming up with an idea.
It is. And I think that's the other thing that, again, you're right. Like, you're going to get some students that are like, ah, that's out of my comfort zone. I'm happy to go along with somebody who comes up with it. And then you might have someone who's like listening and goes, I've had this great idea for this type of volunteer project for years. And I just needed someone to listen to it. And for people like that, like, I think it's important to remember too, like, there are a lot of nonprofits that are always looking for new ideas and new programs, to fund and to be part of. And I would just encourage anyone who has an idea or a concept or just wants to learn more, like, welcome to reach out to Banfield Foundation, like on Instagram or at Banfield Foundation, and just say, hey, I have this idea. Have you ever considered, or, you know, do you think you guys would be interested in? Because we love hearing ideas direct from our associates. And veterinary students are so smart. We've had one, again, out of that Texas A&M class that had this whole business project that she came up with out of it around delivering care to veterinary students because they can't really afford care when they're in college, but they all own students. And so they're like, hey, what could we do to help deliver that care to students who otherwise may not be able to afford it? And so we were working on a mini pilot with her, and then COVID happened, so that got put on hold. But I think folks need to remember, like, they are really smart and they have great ideas, and innovation comes out of things that they just wouldn't expect, but we're always open to hearing things and ideas. So I just encourage people, if they have them, to reach out to organizations that are like-minded and just give it a go.
Yeah, definitely. And sometimes, like, when you're a student or a young professional, you see things that other people don't, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So yes. That's like a really, you know, cool advantage that you have, is to be like out there and learning and growing and having these like observations and experiences that can make a change in the future.
Yes, I agree. Oh, another thing I was going to say is it has nothing to do with us, but I hear about it a lot, like RAVS trips, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's all these student volunteer trips that they can do where they travel and they go abroad. We have a program that we fund for MARS, which is kind of our parent company of Banfield. If you're a tech or a veterinarian, we'll provide up to a $3,000 grant to travel anywhere in the world with a nonprofit, and as long as it's making a difference in the life of a pet or a pet owner. And there was a trip that was supposed to be in May that was canceled, but it was to Rhodes, Greece with one of the veterinary schools where two of our doctors were actually taking them on a trip to Greece to do spay neuter and dentals and other direct care. And I think, again, there's so many cool opportunities for students to be involved in those types of trips that are already happening at their school or with student organizations, that it's such a good entry point for not only making a difference, but understanding part of that commitment when you get into the veterinary profession. Like, I don't ever see a world in which they'll want to volunteer less. So this just gets them, you know, ready for a life of doing it.
Yeah. And traveling and seeing how other countries.
Absolutely.
Things is like really eye-opening for sure.
Yep.
Yeah. So kind of, what do you think really is the future of giving back in veterinary medicine? Like, just based on your experiences and everything.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's continually going to be in direct care. And I just say that because, again, I'm sort of immersed in what's going on in the world right now, which is obviously a recession, and it's, unprecedented unemployment rates, and pet ownership is at a high, and people are having more pets than they are having children. And so I think the more important that pets become to people, and they're already obviously very important, but the closer we are, the more connected we are, the more pets they have. And then when you add in like a pandemic and job loss, like people don't want to have to choose, nor should they ever have to choose between, you know, themselves, their family, their pets. Like we want to keep people and pets together. And so a lot of that is helping to offset the cost of care. It is to deliver, you know, low cost care through shelter partners, obviously. And so I think that it's always going to be in how do we help deliver that care so that pets stay healthy and part of the family. I think that it's really helping, foster care is such a huge movement that has come out of COVID. And I hear it continuously from partners in shelters about how this is kind of the new wave and the new model of how animal welfare should work. It shouldn't be that pets stay in shelters until they finally find a match. It should be that they live in homes until they find a match. Mm-hmm. And so I think, again, when you think about veterinary professionals or students or techs, taking a pet into their home, whether it's a long-term, right, because they chose to keep that foster, or if it's short-term, I think that's also a really great way for people to give back. So it's going to be in how do we keep pets in our lives and help support them there? It's how do we go out and deliver direct care? And again, we even know, like at Banfield, a lot of our veterinarians do volunteer work on their own outside of our volunteer program to local shelters. They're doing spays and neuters. They're, you know, doing going into domestic violence shelters and doing wellness checks on those pets that otherwise won't be able to get to the veterinarian very regularly. And so I think that the future, I mean, it's the need for care will never get less, which is why they're in the profession. And so we just need to make sure that that access to care is made available, regardless if that pet is, that pet owner is able to afford it, or if that pet has a home, if they're waiting for one. And I think that that will just continue to be increasingly important so that people and pets can live together as long as possible.
Mm-hmm. It's really cool to see that, like, even though the world is changing, people are still finding ways to really
yes.
and continue this, you know, like that's
yeah.
really cool to hear.
And I also think travel, volunteering. Well, okay. So I would have said that like 4 months ago, it would have probably been like a bit of a future thing. I hope it will be again, because I hope travel resumes, but I've increasingly been hearing about, travel volunteering, not like just literally going on a volunteer trip, but like when you are, let's say, in Hawaii. We have a friend who went to Hawaii with her family, and one of their days they spent at a shelter where they picked up a dog that was waiting for adoption, and they spent the day with him, taking him to the beach and on hikes and hanging out in the local community. And so the dog gets this experience of what life will be like when he eventually gets adopted. And it's a great enrichment opportunity. And then they give an opportunity to give back as well. And I've heard about this all over the world, or people do this, especially in more tropical places. But I think that that is, people aren't just looking for vacation and then come back and make a difference. I think people are like, hey, I'm so privileged and have the opportunity to take these wonderful experiences. I want to try to give back and help someone, you know, in some of these areas that maybe otherwise wouldn't have that experience. So I love seeing that trend sort of happen. And I can see sort of this generation being really into that as well.
Oh, definitely, definitely, for sure. And so based on your experiences and the people you've met and what you've done so far, is there any kind of story or thing that you've gone through that has kind of shaped you in terms of giving back and helped you see things, like, you know, from a different perspective, or where you've learned a lot?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's one thing. I mean, I've always been inclined to volunteer. I did a lot of volunteering when I was in college for more human-based organizations, and then moved more towards pet when I was out of college. But I think for me, and this is makes me probably a good and a bad fit for nonprofit life, is that when you hear of something or you know something and you know you have the ability to improve it or change it for someone, it's hard to put your head in a pillow at night and think, I could have made someone's life better if I just would have done this, or I could have improved their life if I could have done that. And then making that choice not to do it, just, I don't know, I couldn't live with that feeling. And so I think what we take for granted is how little actions can really add up to make such a huge difference for the lives of those in need. And I've seen that through little things like, my husband is a firefighter here with the city of Portland, and probably 12 years ago, they put an all call out, the city did, for volunteers for a little boy. He was about 3 years old, and he was burned in about 80% of his body, and like lost a limb, and then was taken from his family, and was in the hospital for an extended period of time. And so they sent a note out through the union and said, hey, we need volunteers to come in like every weekend and just spend time with this kid. Is anyone willing to do it? And we didn't have kids at the time, and we were like, sure, we'll go in. And I just think, again, as a three-year-old and being a parent, my perspective changes now, but he was still happy and engaged and just wanted someone to like read to him and play board games and engage. And when you see like, look, it's only 2 hours out of my life, but it made a huge difference in the life of somebody who's going through something really hard that will be with them for the rest of their life. That's the least I can do of giving back to society. And, you know, that is true for human organizations. It's true for pets. And again, I think that's a great example. For my friend that took that dog out in Hawaii, like I don't know how long that dog had been in that shelter. And I know shelters do an increasingly really good job of keeping the number of days that pets are in a shelter low. But the reality is there are pets that live in a shelter for months. And I can imagine how hard it would be to then come across really loving and excited and potentially adoptable you don't have, you know, control over that. But if somebody comes in and shows you kindness, takes you out for the day and shows you what, you know, the outside world is like, and you get to be free and you get to be, you know, a dog and its best day, like, I think that changes the demeanor and the perspective, and hopefully, you know, just, I mean, it has to make a difference, right? Like literally like dog's best day. And then, you know, my hope is they find a home from there and they get to experience that every day. But I think what might just seem like a couple hours out of our lives really does truly change the lives, whether it's, you know, animals, whether it's humans. And I think we just have to have that bigger perspective and realize like it's a drop in the bucket, but it will change somebody's life.
Yeah, that's so true. And yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. And yeah, thanks for sharing also your other advice and experiences with us.
Yes.
But so we like to usually end our podcast with like a little Q&A for our speaker.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so it's just little short questions. So the first one is, what is your ultimate career goal?
Oh, my ultimate career goal is to make, I mean, it's what Mars, our parent company, has, right? It's to make a better world for pets. And I didn't know that was my ultimate career goal until I came to work for Banfield. Again, my background was in public relations and crisis and issues. And I had a lot of tourism and food clients. And one of my clients was Whole Foods, and I loved, you know, specialty gourmet food and travel. And then when I came into pet, it was sort of like, I can't work another job now. Like I joke that like, they will either have to force me out or I'll have to retire from Banfield because it's my, you know, kind of forever place, and making a better world for pets is what I'm really passionate about.
That's great. That's awesome that you love your job like that much.
I do. I'm very lucky.
Yeah. And so do you have a quote or like philosophy that you live by?
Yeah, always do what is right, not what is easy. Yeah, I just think if you live by that, everything else falls into line.
Yeah. And so like, who inspires you to continue to make a change in the industry?
Well, it's not maybe a who as much as I have a handful of organizations. Well, I mean, there are who, right? There's, one of our board members, her name is Hannah Peters. She leads up, Hill and Knowlton Strategies, corporate social responsibility, practice for the US. And she is somebody that I just constantly learn from and, look to for, you know, good advice and guidance. And I'm super lucky to have her on the foundation board of directors. But so she's one person I would list. But there's a couple of organizations that I follow closely, and I absolutely love how they authentically show up in response to not just disasters, but in response to like societal issues. And one, this is kind of random, but I love Chobani. Like, yes, the yogurt. Let me clarify. I don't actually love the yogurt, but I love what they do as a company and a business. I know that sounds really weird, but a good example, and I have a friend that does public affairs and public policy for them. And so, you know, I'm able to see that really it's not just something they do for good media, although they do get some of that. It's just who they are as a company, and their founder has this really amazing belief that you can be both like a shepherd, so someone who protects and provides comfort, and a warrior, because they want to also take out their competition at the same time. And if anyone's listening, they're really interested in learning more, look up Peter McGinnis. He's the president of Chobani, and he's done some phenomenal podcast interviews about sort of their philosophy of giving back and corporate philanthropy. But the one thing that I love, again, has nothing to do with pets, but it inspires me, is a couple months ago, you might have read about it. There was this whole media thing around hot lunch bills in upstate New York. I don't know if you've heard about it at all, but like all these students, like young students, had debt, student lunch debt. They couldn't pay it. They were low income. Their families couldn't afford it. And for some reason, when you get to this, like, I'm giving a paraphrase here, but like you get to this like debt load, the lunch that you get, because it's usually offset, right? Or your family has a plan. The quality of the meal changes. Like all of a sudden, instead of like plan A, you get like meal B because you're in debt. And Chobani, they're based or headquartered in New York, they had heard about it and reached out, and they were just like, look, we think that good nutritious food is like a human right. And I can't believe that children are being penalized because their family can't afford to pay their hot lunch bill. So they just called up the school district and literally paid the bill for everybody. Oh my God. and then they heard about like a second lunch bill issue, like somewhere else in Colorado where they have a distribution facility, and they did the same thing there. And while it wasn't like part of their like corporate social responsibility plan necessarily, it has become more of a focus for them. And then also I think looking at like, how do you change some legislation around that? And then of course, now with COVID, they're doing some really amazing feeding programs across the country. So organizations like that really inspire me. Same with World Central Kitchen. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them, but they've really done some phenomenal work, especially in COVID. Check them out if you get a chance. But they were founded by Chef Jose Andreas after Maria, I think, or one of the former or devastating hurricanes in Puerto Rico. And he literally showed up. He's a famous restaurateur and chef, and just did these like pop-up kitchens that utilize local chefs or cooks that are out of work and fresh ingredients. And it's like essentially an original food cart, but like at a tent, and it's free food for local folks who can't afford it. That's culturally appropriate. And now they're serving like millions of fresh meals across America in light of COVID. And they have like pop-up kitchens in like Central Park for like hospitals, you know, workers and essential, you know, workers. And they're keeping restaurants, employees, employed because they're, you know, paying them to like make meals to field like senior centers, like people can't afford it during COVID. And I just, my heart explodes and my head explodes when I think about it, because they just do such phenomenal work. So those are two organizations that right now, when I need a bright moment or a source of inspiration, I look up, you know, their Instagram and I look up stories about them, and I just get energized and excited and recharged. So I would recommend people do that.
No, those are great stories. And like I said, like people coming together in times of like crisis, it's amazing to hear.
Yeah.
So where can people find you? Like if they ever want to reach out, have a question, email, social media, website, all of that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So banfieldfoundation.org is our website. We also are on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn. So Instagram, it's at Banfield Foundation. I'm also on Instagram and LinkedIn. I'm Kim Van Syk. My Instagram, because my last name is really hard to spell, my Instagram is at KVS for pets. I'm always happy to engage with folks and talk about the foundation or ways they can give back as well. And if anyone wants to reach out and just connect with me, ask questions or send ideas or feedback my way, they can reach me at kim.vansyk@banfield.com. And I'm sure you'll share that information as well.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. Thanks again. Like, we really appreciate you being with us. And also a big thank you to our Next Pod listeners. Remember, you are the future. Join us next time for another in-depth talk.